Today on Mr. Media, I'll talk to Robert Evans, the man who brought Paramount Studios back from the dead in the 1960s and 1970s by placing creative bets on everything from The Godfather and Love Story to Chinatown and Urban Cowboy. Stick around. No matter what you say, the kid stays in the picture. So there!
I'm still there. A little injured, but still there.
So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview, brought to you by Amazon.com, Audible.com, and 1-800-DIAL-DJs. Please stop by the website, MrMedia.com, click on our advertisers, support the show. And remember, there's more than 1,000 interviews available at MrMedia.com. We've been doing this since February 2007. Hope you'll find something you like. And thanks for listening. Mr. Media is recorded live before a studio audience of well-dressed bean counters who wouldn't know a deal they couldn't refuse even if Marlon Brando delivered it to them in person. In the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida.
I love St. Petersburg. I've enjoyed it many a time.
Oh, I will share that.
No, I really have. I spent a lot of time in Florida. And in St. Petersburg, oh, I've had some hot times in St. Petersburg.
Now I'm going to have to ask you about that in a minute.
I love the weather.
All right. Robert Evans spent his entire career searching for movie franchises that would change his life. First as an admittedly, well, underwhelming leading man, and later as the head of Paramount Studios. Little did he know that Evans' own story would be one of the greatest tales he would ever tell. As they say in Hollywood, this one's got everything. Sex, drugs, celebrities, vast fortunes won and wasted, and yes, even murder. In his autobiography, The Kid Stays in the Picture, Evans paints a picture of himself as a guy frequently touched by luck over the course of his career. Unfortunately, good fortune was often fleeting in his experience, usually for reasons of his own making. Now, the man who rescued Paramount Studios from the junk heap of cinematic history in the 1970s and 80s by greenlighting Love Story, The Godfather, Chinatown, Rosemary's Baby, Marathon Man, and Urban Cowboy, lived the life of 10 mortal men. The Kid Stays in the Picture, re-released on the 20th anniversary of its first publication, told juicy tales of dozens of Evans' friends and conquests, including Mario Puzo, Eric Segal, Ally McGraw, Henry Kissinger, Charles Bluedorn, Marty Davis, Jack Nicholson, and many, many more. And if you read the book at some point in the last two decades, thinking there must be more stories to tell, you'd be correct. In September, Evans' long-anticipated second memoir, The Fat Lady Sings, will be published. Now, I've only read a short excerpt so far, but if the rest is as compelling as this tale of Congressman Jack Kennedy from 1949, it's sure to be extremely popular. And with that, Robert Evans, welcome to Mr. Media.
Thank you so very much. Wonderful to be here.
Glad to make your acquaintance, enjoyed the book. And I wanted to ask you, you know, one of the recurring storylines in The Kid Stays in the Picture, unfortunately, was your inability to hold on to the money that you earned over the years. And that seemed like whether that was as a salesman for your brother at Evan Picone over the years, or as a Paramount studio executive. And it happened so often, I almost had to ask you if that was actually true. Did that really happen?
What really happened is I've never been monetarily oriented. Money never has meant things to me. Doing what I would do and enjoying it, enjoying life, came way in front of the green dollar. I've led a very rich life. I'm not rich in money, and I don't care about it. Got to work hard, though. Good people that way. Can't retire too easily in St. Petersburg. It is I can play there, but I can't retire there.
Oh, man. So, I mean, what amazes me is that you tell at a lot of points how you lost everything. At one point, you've got nothing. You've got $37 in the bank. You've got this. And yet, you always manage to come around, and you always manage to get that next deal or make something happen. That's pretty amazing.
Well, the good luck made me in 1979 a multimillionaire, and by 1989, the bad luck made me a dollarair. That's been my life, a good luck and bad luck life. I don't know if it's worth it. I don't know if I'd want to live it again. Yeah, I think I would.
Hey, you tell the story early in the book about your father, who was a dentist.
That's correct.
In Harlem. And it was very interesting to me as I got further in the book to think back to your dad. He had the potential to be a great concert pianist.
That's
he was very popular in Harlem. He was one of the few dentists who would work on African Americans, and yet he was very frustrated in life. He didn't. You and Charles made it big, but your dad never quite accomplished what he wanted.
Well, he had to support a family. He was a concert pianist, actually, but playing the piano didn't bring back the food there. It was during the Depression, and he became a dentist, and he was the only dentist in Harlem who was white, and he had four black dentists working for him, or with him, and four white dentists, and four black nurses, and four white nurses. He had the most, the single largest integrated dental office there was in America at the time. He loved the idea of the integration.
Was there something in the way that your dad lived his life during the time he was a dentist, and then later when he wasn't doing that, that affected the way you thought about money or career?
Right. So I didn't want to have his life. I loved him. He had great qualities about him, and I think I learned certain basic ways of life from him. And my brother and I often talked about him in a wonderful way of real love of our father.
It seemed like you and your brother Charles really examined the life that your dad led, and in many ways wanted to make sure that you didn't, as you said, did not live that life.
Exactly. It was not a life we wanted to have. We wanted to have a maybe more selfish life. But we held back many things that we could have done because of his moral ways of living, and some of it, I suppose, rubbed off on us.
And let me ask you this. In the same way that you and Charles studied your father's life, when you sit down to write a memoir, as you did in 93, 94 with The Kid Stays in the Picture, you can't help but look at the things that you've done in life and reflect back. What you said that you would probably be, you might or might not want to live this life over again. Are there things that you learned about yourself that you didn't realize until you wrote the book?
Oh, yes. It was not cathartic. It was very depressing.
Really?
And I learned that, well, let's say good luck comes from good ideas, and bad luck comes from bad ideas, and I've had both, and they seem to go hand in hand.
Did you make changes in your life after you finished the book and had studied what you had done?
I've had to work harder because I got older, and the older you get, the more difficult it is to be competitive. And I'm as competitive a guy as you want to know. I may not have as good a batting average, but I'm as competitive as you want to know.
But what about in terms of personal relationships? It seems like your business relationships have always been very solid. You've maintained Stanley Jaffe and Lou Dern, people like that who've stayed with you throughout your career, but maybe more interpersonal relationships. On reading the book, I'm thinking you might have looked at that and gone, this is something
my
maybe.
My personal relationships, I can say in a single line, and that is to be able to be thin and thin with the other person. Be in life, doing bad times and good times, have the same interest and embrace. I've had it, I've given it, and it makes a difference between friendship treasured or just friendship. Hmm. And friendship treasured is a great treasure.
What about when you write a book like this and you tell stories about so many friends, family members? Were there any stories that when the book was published in 1994 that you wish that you had not told or shared?
I wish I hadn't lived it.
That's pretty damn honest. I'll buy that. Okay.
And by living it, I told it. And it has repercussions in some places, but I couldn't say I didn't tell the truth. Mm-hmm. About myself, I rather self-critical. And I deserve to be. I suppose I can be more critical. And I think I have been that in my new book that's coming out. Mm-hmm. Well, if that may be saying.
Well, I'm going to ask you about that in just a second. There was one or two other things I wanted to ask you about this, and that, when I read The Kid Stays in the Picture, the thing that I liked best, I loved the stories where you succeeded. I know some people, probably in Hollywood, like the stories best where you fail, where things fall apart.
But is that true?
Yeah, I mean, I like reading the success of love story and how it happened. I love reading the success of The Godfather and how early you were involved in that.
I started that with a $12,000 investment of a 35-page treatment called Mafia. Mm-hmm. We changed the name of it to The Godfather as the book was being written. Mario needed money to pay off the bookies, and he asked if he would be in breach of contract if he changed the name of the Mafia to Godfather. I said, why not? Mm-hmm. I didn't even know he'd get a book out of it. I was with Mario for many, many years, and he was a wonderful man, and I think a pretty great writer.
I would say so. And, you know, it's funny. It was interesting reading that part of it. I had another writer on this show about 2 years ago, Bruce J. Friedman, who you probably know.
Oh, he's wonderful.
And he told me the story before the story of you buying the rights to Mafia, which became The Godfather, and how Mario was always – they worked together at some men's magazines in the 60s, and Mario was always broke, and he was always
– he was a gambler.
Yeah.
More gamblers are broke than rich.
It was very interesting to make that connection between the two stories. Let's go to the new book, The Fat Lady Sang.
She sang. She doesn't sing.
She sang. Thing,
my luck. This is lucky now.
Okay.
She forgot the last verse.
Well, what is different in or new in this book that was not in the first book?
It's in the first book I got from health to sickness. In the second book I got from through sickness, as tough a sickness as anyone wants to be in, and got struggled back into health. Hmm. And it wasn't easy, and it hasn't been easy, except that it's self-satisfying to know if I can do it, other people can do it too.
So is this a story more about getting well, or is it another collection of anecdotes of career?
No, it's doing it again and enjoying, appreciating it more.
I mentioned in the introduction the story about Jack Kennedy.
Yes.
That's a great story, and I know that's been printed before, but it's still, you know.
It's a true story, and it was just two incidents, actually, with him. In his life was a minor insignificance. In my life, I'm proud to talk about it now. He's a great guy.
Mm. Who else do we hear stories about in the new book that will be of interest to folks?
Oh, from the Pope John.
Okay.
That's starting with a big name, isn't it?
That's kind of a big name, yeah.
To Jack Nicholson, Warren Beatty, a lot of ladies.
Good. Any more Henry Kissinger stories?
Yes, there were. I had more in the first book on Henry. Henry and I were very close friends and for full decade. And I think he's one of the most brilliant men in the world. Mm-hmm. And I was a good friend to him, and he was a good friend to me. He used to stay at the house when he came here. And money never meant anything to him then. Mm-hmm. He was proud of what he did as an immigrant American, mm-hmm. becoming Secretary of State. And we had many, many experiences together. He proved his friendship towards me and to me like family. I'll never forget it for him.
Why do you think over the years that guys like Kissinger were drawn to you? I mean, someone like Dr. Kissinger meets so many people all around the world. And yet you and he struck up this relationship that was very close, I mean, almost daily contact for years. How does that happen?
It's a very good question, and it's hard to answer. We were both rebels in our own way, very different ways, but rebels. We acted on how we believed, and... we had great times together, actually. Diverse, totally.
Mm-hmm.
Embraced tremendously.
I think one of the best stories in the entire book is when you need him to come to the Godfather opening.
That's right, he was there.
And it's the snowstorm, and the next morning he's going overseas on vital U.S. business, but he dropped everything for you to go to see the opening of the Godfather.
That's absolutely true. He also came to the ceremony in New York, where I got the gold key to the city of New York, which is 1975. Hmm. And he flew in for the night. He was the first one there and the last one to leave. I went back to Washington the next morning. But he was there. That's what you call friendship treasure. Hmm.
Let me ask you a question. You don't know this. I make my living actually as a co-author on books, memoirs, autobiography, things like that. And the thing that left me curious reading through your book, there's no reference of a co-author, anybody helping you with the book. Did you write this by yourself? Was Peter Bart nowhere near, or was there somebody around?
No, I wrote the entire book myself. Did I have help from people? I had to have help from people to get the experience. It's not me. Mm-hmm. It's me and someone else. There are three sides to every story. Your side, my side, and the truth. And memories shared serve each differently. Mm. So you know that very, very well. And unfortunately, it gets a few fights in that. One thing I've been blessed with is a good long-term memory. And I think my batting average on it has been rather exacting. And sometimes, from my point of view, very self-deprecating.
Mm, absolutely.
You got to pay for it. Well, and I paid for it in more ways than you would want to pay for it.
Yeah.
I often wonder whether it was ever worth it. I really mean that. Mm. But I'm here talking to you, so I suppose it is worth it.
I appreciate that. Let me wind up with two questions of a more general nature, more Hollywood type questions. The first is, I'm wondering, what's most different about Hollywood today from the 60s and the 70s, either for better or worse? Or I guess I'm kind of wondering, is technology the biggest difference, or is it the people? Still the people.
No, it's not the people, and it is technology. But the American film has become the biggest export we make in our country. It is number one. The American film is number one in every country in the world. That's what's happened in the last 30 years. And with that, it brings in the big corporations who want to buy. It's not entertainment anymore, it's media. Me talking to you like this is media. And everything connected to that is, it's scary. It's so big. And we're number one. I'm proud to say I'm part of the business because of the young people coming in all the time with new ideas. I hope so. I was a young person who came in with new ideas and certainly benefited by it and benefited the industry by it. Is it growing tremendously? And with the big business going into it. And when big business comes into it, a lot of things change, which I'd rather not talk about.
All right, so my last question is this. If you could pinpoint for someone who's interested in going into the business the one key element to being successful in Hollywood, what would it be?
It got to be a take rejection. It ain't easy. It's a tough business. I think the toughest because it's like the weather. You don't know what's going to happen. And a lot of people don't have the guts. And you got to be able to really stand there and take resentment and also work hard. You can't do it by mistake. Got to do your homework.
Well, folks, listen, you can find my guest, Robert Evans' first book, The Kid Stays in the Picture, or his upcoming second memoir, The Fat Lady Sang. Now you got me confused.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah. See, I was very lucky there.
Yeah.
She forgot that last verse.
I know. Either book. And the second book will be out in September 2013. Both books are available at great bookstores everywhere, or you can order either one of them right now at a great price at MrMedia.com. If you're watching the video, just below our picture, you can see a picture of the two books. You can just click on them. It'll take you to Amazon. You can buy the book right now. Mr. Evans, I understand you have a website. It is RobertEvansLegacyFansite.com. Does that sound right to you?
If I have it, I don't know about it.
Okay. All right. And we'll let people look for the new book. Robert Evans, Mr. Evans, thank you so much for joining us on Mr. Media today. It was a pleasure to meet you.
Well, thank you so much for having me with you.
Right. Be well.
I'm trying.
Okay. Thank you.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye. You can see and hear almost 1,000 Mr. Media interviews by visiting our main site, MrMedia.com, MrMedia.com. Or check out the more than 200 video interviews on the Mr. Media radio site on YouTube. And I'd sure appreciate if you'd show some love for Mr. Media's advertisers, including Stitcher. Apple named Stitcher a top 5 news app of 2011. It's a free mobile app for your smartphone or tablet that lets you listen to your favorite shows and discover the best of news, entertainment, and sports on demand. You can listen whenever you want to more than 5,000 shows, get customized recommendations, and discover what your friends are listening to. My own list of Stitcher favorites is pretty eclectic. I start my day with an hour of MSNBC's Morning Joe with Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski. Then it's the latest 2-minute update from the Onion News Network. After that, I'll listen to WTF with Marc Maron, Here's the Thing with Alec Baldwin, HBO's Real Time with Bill Maher, and excerpts from E's Chelsea Lately and The Soup with Joel McHale. Also in regular rotation on my Stitcher playlist, the BS Report with ESPN's Bill Simmons, the TechCrunch headlines, and the Don Geronimo Show. The latest episodes of each show, whether originating from broadcasts, cable TV, radio syndication, or podcasts, are continuously updated. Stitcher is a free app for your iPhone, iPad, Kindle, Fire, BlackBerry, Droid, and more. And show your support of Mr. Media by getting, did I mention it's free? The app at stitcher.com/Mr. Media. That's stitcher.com/MR Media. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. We're also supported by Audible. Check out Audible's 30-day trial membership and download the audiobook version of the book everyone's been talking about, 50 Shades of Grey by E.L. James. Sign up for your free trial today at audible.com/radio. Again, audibletrial.com/radio. And finally, if you need a disc jockey for a wedding, bar mitzvah, corporate event, or just a big old party, please consider calling 1-800-DIAL-DJS, the party authority, for all your party entertainment needs. You can call 1-800-DIAL-DJS or go to their website, 1-800-DIAL-DJS.com, and tell them Mr. Media sent you. And thanks for listening.